right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are going back to 2010 for another Missing Pieces installment. We're going to be talking about Edgar Wright's Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which is a movie I had really been wanting to go back to. So I'm really glad that Rico from Always the Critic podcast brought this one to my attention as a good movie for us to go do the whole puzzle pieces treatment on, and it was a good excuse for me to finally get around to rewatching it. I hadn't seen it since the theater, and I know a lot of people who love this movie, and I liked it when it came out. I appreciated it, especially as the nerd that I am, but I didn't love it. And so I've always wanted to go back and rewatch it, and I gotta say, I kind of loved it this time. So I'm really excited to talk about it. So before we get into that, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You could also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser, and you can follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where a whole lot of nerds like to talk about movies and probably all love Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. So yeah, join us over there. Follow us on social media. Make sure you're subscribed. Rate and review. Do all those things. And other than that, I think it's time to get into a really fun conversation about a great movie. All right. So joining me today, we've got Rico coming back to the show. How's it going, man?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you, David?
I am all right. I am watching lots and lots of movies. And the one we're about to talk about is something I hadn't watched since the theater and have always wanted to revisit. And so I was really glad that you brought it up as a good possibility for this Missing Pieces series, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Oh, man. So this is a movie that I remember when I even saw like commercials leading up to the release. Mm-hmm. And I was inundated with so many ads at the time that I thought it was going to be a huge deal when it came out. And boy, was it not a big deal when it came out.
It's so weird. Yeah, it's kind of settled into like a little cult thing and everything. I don't understand why this movie didn't break out bigger. And I mean, it definitely has its fans, you know, but it's one of those movies like, you know, it's funny over on Awesome Movie or the other podcast that I produce. You know, we talk about cult classics, and sometimes some of the movies that we end up picking as cult classics, for example, Edgar Wright's Hot Fuzz was one. And I think about it, and I'm like, "What? You know, was it a cult classic, or was it like a major, major hit?" And it really wasn't a major, major hit, which is so freaking strange to me. And the same situation with this one.
Yeah, what's crazy about a lot of movies, especially since, like, you and I, we are part of a film community, and we've probably been around movies for most of our lives. So when we start talking about movies and when we start, you know, really engaging with movies, we kind of forget that there's a mass audience that sometimes is not, you know, in tuned with what's coming out next and what's the next movie by the major director and stuff like that. So, you know, we get caught by surprise when we think, oh, this movie's going to be huge, and then it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so it's so weird when that stuff happens. But yeah, I mean, I'm glad though that this is a movie that you know, we're going to get a chance to talk about. And why don't we jump in and start getting into some puzzle pieces for this thing? What do you got for your first puzzle piece?
My first puzzle piece, I am going to go ahead and use another film by Edgar Wright. It only makes sense to do that just because of the fact that there's such a huge influence from his prior films. So I'm choosing Shaun of the Dead. Mm-hmm. So I'm choosing Shaun of the Dead mostly because of the fact that, number one, obviously it's directed by Edgar Wright. Number two, you can see a lot of the influences of cutting. His editing style is very huge in that movie. So like his either... he can cut really quickly between a couple scenes, just like you do in Scott Pilgrim. The way he plays with the camera, where like he'll move the camera one side and then move it back. You see that a lot in Shaun of the Dead. And a lot of pop culture references throughout Shaun of the Dead that kind of influence Scott Pilgrim as well. So those were a few things that I could see in Scott Pilgrim that you can see in Shaun of the Dead.
Sure, absolutely. I think the biggest thing when rewatching this, that really stood out to me was just how just visually stylistic and just so unique and cool it was, with the way that he's doing some of those crazy camera movements and really blending in all the comic book style stuff that's happening. And, you know, obviously this being a Missing Pieces episode, we're going to talk, you know, at the end about movies that have come since. But it's almost hard to even think of ones because it is just so in a league of its own as far as the style is concerned.
I was talking with my brother about this movie based on just the style of the movie alone, because it's so hyper energetic and there's so much going into it, not just in camera movements, but CGI that's added into the movie. And my brother was telling me that it has no business being as good as it is,
right?
Because of the fact that there's so much going on. But Edgar Wright knows what he's doing. He knows that he could get away with just enough, you know, style and, you know, mixed in with the substance that he has, that it really has. It makes it a very fun movie.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great lead into my first puzzle piece, which is another underappreciated cult kind of movie that's also heavily stylized, and that is the Wachowskis' 2008 Speed Racer adaptation, which I absolutely love. I'm going to defend this movie to my dying day. It is so much fun. It is so just over the top and just nonstop, just style, just being thrown at you nonstop. And, you know, depending on your tastes, maybe it's a little bit too much style for some people, or maybe the wrong kind of style for some people. But to me, that movie is just so freaking great. And unlike, you know, that's again, I think I just said that a minute ago, just, you know, unlike anything you've really seen, I mean, it really does something original and unique, and that stands out in a way that to me is just super, super impressive. And yeah, I can't say enough great things about Speed Racer, and I don't think I've gotten a chance to bring it up on the show before, so I'm really glad to be able to bring it up. And yeah, it really does an amazing job of taking a movie and like adding in all of these elements of like comic book, cartoon, video game, and all that, and really, you know, making it into a cinema kind of thing.
What I really appreciate about Speed Racer and Scott Pilgrim, both of those movies really lean into the comic book or to the cartoon, or, you know, they base themselves out of their actual property. A lot of times you'll see like graphic novels or comic books or anything get put on screen and they try to ground them to, you know, a real life scenario.
Right.
And so a lot of the fantastical elements kind of get left behind. And it kind of sucks, but when a movie does lean into it, I think it's really, really cool because it's something different. It's not something we see every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it makes it stand out from just being another, you know, action movie or something like that. It makes it its own genre, which is what I love.
Exactly. That's what I really love
as well.
So
what do you got for your next piece?
So my next piece, so this movie is, again, it's very into its pop culture nature. It's almost referencing upon itself. It's self-aware almost. And there's a lot of things that the movie does where it makes it, you can't tell like reality from what's going on. Sometimes there's dream sequences. So that kind of reminded me of the movie 500 Days of Summer with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like that movie is about a guy who is after a girl. And in his eyes, that girl is perfect. Kind of the way Scott sees Ramona. And at the same time, as he's, you know, living out his life, chasing after this girl in 500 Days of Summer, we see like moments where, you know, there's surreal things happening. Like, I think it's the first time that he kisses Summer in the movie. After that, there's like an entire musical montage where the entire city kind of like galvanizes around him. And they're singing that Hall & Oates song, My Dreams Come True. And like he sees himself in his reflection as Han Solo. And there's a lot of blending of, you know, what's really happening and what's in the guy's imagination. And we see that with Scott Pilgrim, where sometimes he'll be with Ramona, or sometimes he'll be dreaming about Ramona. And there's these moments of, is this really happening? Or, you know, is he dreaming about this? So that surreal type of mix is what kind of brought me with 500 Days of Summer.
Totally. I can absolutely see that. I think that's like the second time in a few weeks now that 500 Days of Summer have come up on the on the show. And I haven't, that's another movie I haven't seen since it first came out. And I should really go back and revisit it, because I remember it was a pretty cool, inventive movie and a lot of fun when it came out. I should watch that again.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend it. And so there's a lot that you could dig out of that movie for sure.
Nice. All right, well, I'll go to my next piece. And this one, you know, as far as this movie, the main thing is, of course, you know, kind of capturing that whole nerd culture and, you know, the video games, comic books, all that kind of stuff. And I think one of the best uses of nerd culture before it are the Kevin Smith movies, especially those first few, Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy.
Right.
And so I'm just going to put them all together as one little bucket of puzzle pieces there. But yeah, I mean, no one really captured that kind of, you know, that culture really as well as Kevin Smith did before. And I think Scott Pilgrim, Edgar Wright does it pretty much just as well as Kevin Smith did. I mean, he really gets what makes people love these things, and some of it being, you know, more mainstream references, some of it being smaller ones. I mean, The Clash at Demon Head is one of my favorite Nintendo games. So, you know, I think most people probably have no freaking idea what that is, you know. But but it absolutely does capture that nerd culture so well. And like I said, I mean, the Kevin Smith, that initial trilogy of movies, he was just so tapped in. And I think trying to capture that is something Edgar Wright was really going for.
I would say that being able to tap into pop culture is something that Edgar Wright has been able to show off in multiple movies. Not just pop culture and like movie references or video game references, but also music as well.
Sure.
Does a very good job of selecting what songs go into the movies. You can see that in, you know, Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy. You could see it with his movies as well, with obviously Scott Pilgrim, but you can also see it in Baby Driver. So Edgar Wright really knows what he's doing in terms of engaging pop culture in his movies.
Yeah, I feel like Edgar Wright is probably... Him and Tarantino are two of the filmmakers who you really pay attention the most when they come out with like a list of favorite movies of, you know, any kind of genre or anything.
Yes.
or favorite things even in general. Like they love their stuff and they love talking about stuff like that.
Oh yeah, it's always something like reading either Edgar Wright's Twitter feed. Sometimes he'll just be going off on a movie, or he'll be making recommendations, and you have to pay attention because he's so inventive with his style that he's looking at stuff and how he could play around with that stuff, his own influences. So
totally,
you kind of have to pay attention there.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you got for your next piece?
My next one is going to be another rom-com, and it's also Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which is surprising. The next one is all about a guy who idealizes a girl and is going through any obstacle to be with that girl. And it's a very specific part of the movie, but it's that. And it's 10 Things I Hate About You. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in love with a girl that he knows nothing about. Kind of the way Scott Pilgrim is in love with a girl that he knows nothing about. He just sees her as an idealized dream girl, like can do no wrong, and goes through all these different obstacles to be with the girl, even though he doesn't know her that well. So in 10 Things I Hate About You, you know, he joins a study group and tries to be her tutor, and then tries to pay off the guy that nobody wants to talk to, pay him off to try to date her sister so that way he could go on a date with her. At the same time, they have to make sure that the bully doesn't get in the way. Like, there's multiple things, multiple factors for him just to date this one girl. And in Scott Pilgrim, you have the same thing. You have one guy who wants to date a girl, but he has to go through seven different exes in order to do it.
Right.
You know, are these girls that much trouble? Are they worth this much trouble, you know? But in the eyes of these two characters, they are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, this puzzle piece really kind of, you know, leads into the conversation around this movie lately. I mean, this has kind of gotten a little bit of a bad rep for, you know, everything, the way that things are now. I mean, I don't think a movie like this could be made now because, you know, the main character would be considered too creepy or something like that. And I don't know. I mean, these are just, they're such fun movies and it's, you know, It's a fun genre.
It is a fun genre for sure. And it's tough when we start to view movies through the lens of not when they were made, but how the audience is viewing them now.
Yeah.
It's very unfair to a lot of different movies, unless it's like super blatant type of material.
Sure.
But like stuff like that, you know, like a, let's say, almost a stalker type of character, right? I'm not saying that they are stalkers. It's just that everything they're doing is manipulative in some way to try to get the girl. Mm-hmm. And, you know, stuff like that was played for laughs, you know, all the time back in the day. One example that I remember, if for people who used to watch the show Friends or still love the show Friends, there was an episode where Phoebe had a stalker and it was played by David Arquette. And he, it was played for laughs. Like, oh, he would like peep at her with binoculars and he would know the entire sequence of her morning, what coffee shop. And he was like this weird, awkward dude. And it was played for laughs. But now in today's setting, I can see people get mad about it and like, you know, go back and say, oh, that's not right and stuff. So
I feel like David Arquette has a whole string of performances that wouldn't fly today.
Oh, yes, he does. You're right about that.
He's got that market cornered, I guess. Oh, man. All right. Well, I will go on to my next piece then. So I am going to go with another movie with a hell of a lot of style that, you know, came before it and blended the whole comic book thing with movie making. And that's Robert Rodriguez's Sin City, which, you know, has just such a very unique, interesting style that captures the graphic novels that it's based on while, you know, really just, again, doing something that hadn't been seen on screen and not with that, you know, attention to detail before.
That was also on my list.
Nice.
Sin City. Yeah, we both have the same movie there. Just the fact that it feels like it is taking the graphic novel. It's like taking the pages off of the graphic novel and putting them right onto the screen. I think it's so well done, heavily stylized. You know, there's not very many movies you could say that about where it feels like you're looking at the comic book on the screen.
Totally. No, absolutely. It's just such a cool look. And again, I mean, this is something we've been talking about through this whole conversation so far, but it just makes it feel so unique, so unique and original.
Imagine if Sin City had just been filmed in a normal, you know, color and not so heavily stylized, which a lot of comic book movies do.
Sure.
It just wouldn't work.
No, it would not be the same thing at all. It would just, again, it just goes back to just being another action movie, basically.
Yeah, and we have so many generic action movies nowadays that it's hard to tell them apart. So it's nice when a director really puts their own flair and style into a movie. That's always great to see.
Sure, absolutely. So was that your last piece then? Did I steal it from you?
No, I actually have one more.
Okay, what do you got?
So I have another movie that's based off a graphic novel. This movie is very, it was released pretty much pretty much at the same time almost. So it's kind of hard to say that it was a influence because they both got released in the same year. But I think this movie was released like a couple of months before. But I see a lot of similarities in the movie Kick-Ass. This movie, again, is a graphic novel. It's about a lot of action, a lot of fighting. So there's a hyper-stylized fighting style. You get it from Hit Girl, mostly in the movie. But the fact that it's so colorful, the movie Kick-Ass, each character brings their own style, kind of the way every character in Scott Pilgrim has their own fighting style, whether it's the ex-girlfriend who's really very good at fighting, or if it's like the twins who do all their fighting through, you know, the speaker and the sounds. Everybody has their own style in Kick-Ass. And on top of that, you have the main protagonist who he wants to be a hero. He wants to be like the guy, but he has no training. He has no true reason to really motivate him. Mm-hmm. It's just at the end of the day, finally, he builds up the necessary courage to know that he's doing this for himself, not just for, just to be cool. And sure. In Scott Pilgrim, he realizes that he needs to do things more for himself. I think if I'm not mistaken, in Scott Pilgrim at the very end, he gets to do over the final fight. And the reason he gets to do the final fight, he has that extra life. But then the reason he gets the sword out, and it's like a self-respect thing.
Right.
And so
it
makes him more powerful. Same thing with Kick-Ass. He's able to trust in his own instincts instead of relying on everyone else or, listening to everybody else and what they think he should be. So things like that is what I drew from Kick-Ass for Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy that these two movies came out in the same year. They really tapped into the same feeling, the same culture that hadn't really been represented quite so much on screen before, and certainly not in this way. They really are companion pieces in a way.
Yeah, and so I wonder if there was something going on in that time frame of 2010 that really lent themselves for these movies to come out at that time and, speak to that person or those type of people who maybe didn't know what they wanted to do with themselves, but they knew they wanted something.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I think they're great companion pieces together.
Absolutely. All right, well, I will go on to my next piece. I have two more, so I'll just knock those out back to back. First up is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I considered this one.
Yeah, you did. I mean, for me, it was mainly also the inventiveness of the way how everything is shot and all that, but mainly it's that ending of knowing that, they have all of this, relationship and emotional baggage, but they're going to just go for it anyway.
Yeah, that it's very well done, and it does match the ending of this movie as well.
Totally. It's such a freaking good movie.
Yes, it is.
And then the other one I was going to bring up, and this one's not so very specific, but just for the culture itself, but that's The Wizard, the Fred Savage Nintendo movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, going all the way back. And I mean, there's not so much with plot or anything like that, but just so much with, that's one of the earlier examples I could think of trying to capture, nerd culture that really never got displayed on screen before.
Yeah, I think that's what this movie does so well, is displaying that nerd culture in a way that nerds would actually understand, framing it as almost like a video game at moments or a comic book or just the pop culture references of the time. A lot of movies won't do that. They won't cater to that audience in that way.
Yeah, and maybe considering that they didn't show up to buy tickets, maybe
that's there's a reason why.
damn nerds.
Oh man.
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and do the finish puzzle, and then we will talk about some movies that have come since that maybe Scott Pilgrim vs. the World itself has influenced. So, finished puzzle includes Shaun of the Dead, Speed Racer, 500 Days of Summer, Kevin Smith movies such as Clerks, Small Rats, and Chasing Amy, 10 Things I Hate About You, Sin City, Kick-Ass, Eternal Sunshine, and The Wizard. So why don't we talk a little bit about some movies that have come since this? This came out, of course, in 2010, so the last 10 years, nerd culture has absolutely started to explode a little bit and become much more mainstream, I think. What do you think? Are there any movies that you thought this reminded you of that have come since?
So this movie, we mentioned it earlier, kind of stands on its own because there's not many movies that are made like this. There's plenty of comic book movies. I don't think we can sit here and say that this was the reason why, but, you know, there's a lot of movies out there. There's one movie, though, that I kind of feel has, like, some similar beats, at least, and that is Ready Player One, just because of the fact that it, you know, the main character is in this fantastical world. Everything around him is some type of pop culture reference in some way. Everything is stylized when he's in the world. Even though the main story is about a kid who goes into VR to actually be in that world, but it's mostly when they're in the VR world, that's when you really get a sense of how it feels a little similar to Scott Pilgrim. Just because everything's so fantastical.
No, totally. I'm surprised I didn't think of that one. That is a great one to bring up. I think it definitely captures a lot of that hyper stylization, as well as the nerd references and all that stuff. And, you know, every minute has something in it, little Easter eggs and all that stuff. I think it's definitely a great one.
Yeah, so that was, for me personally at least, is the only one that really, when I was thinking about all this, is the only one that came to mind for that specific purpose of after Scott Pilgrim.
For sure, for sure. Well, I've got two. One that's not actually out yet, and they both have Ryan Reynolds. First one is Deadpool, and the second one is his upcoming Free Guy, which who knows if it's ever going to come out with everything going on in the world right now. But Deadpool is, you know, just filled with just self-referential, you know, pop culture stuff and just all that kind of just really quick, you know, a gag a minute and, just, you know, just filling the scenes. Like I said, Easter eggs, like with that Ready Player One and just so many little, inside jokes and things like that. And so I thought that one fits. Plus, of course, being a comic book movie, that helps as well. Yes. And then, you know, who knows with this Free Guy movie, whether or not it's going to be any good or anything, but it certainly does seem to be tapping into some kind of, you know, moment of video games and, you know, what makes video games, what makes people love video games and all the little inside jokes and stuff that go along with it. And it looked like it could be good, you know?
It does look like it'll be a lot of fun to watch. And I think the biggest thing that a lot of these movies like this that are very seeped into the pop culture is going back to see what references you may have missed.
Sure.
Or things that maybe the first time you watched them, you had no idea that was in the corner of the screen. You know, stuff like that. I think that these movies lend themselves to that. Can I just say, though, this movie, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, retroactively has one of the most stacked casts in a long time.
Totally. And
I say retroactively because at the time, that cast was a lot of nobodies at the time. But if you were to try to put that movie together now with the same actors, like, I don't think you could do it.
It's so true. I mean, everybody in it has gone on to do so much great stuff. And I mean, of course, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I think, is probably the number one for this cast. She's just so damn good in everything that she's in.
She really is. I mean, we have superstars like, you know, Chris Evans. You have Oscar winners and Brie Larson. If anything, Michael Cera, who was the star of this movie, has actually taken a backseat to everyone else around him in the movie.
I know. Yeah, he had a moment for a few years, like around this movie. He was in a lot of stuff. He was becoming a big star. Now I don't know what exactly he's doing, but I'm sure he's out there just being Michael Cera.
Yeah, the last time I saw him was in the movie Gloria Bell, where he just showed up playing her son just randomly.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It kind of like took me by surprise. I was like, Michael Cera's in this movie?
Well, any other closing thoughts before we wrap it up?
I would say that if you haven't seen this movie, even if you're not a big comic book fan, that's fine. You will enjoy just the frenetic nature of this movie because it moves at such a quick pace. No time is wasted. There's jokes in every single scene of the movie. The way it is shot is very engaging. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a movie that I believe deserved a lot more attention that it got. And if it gets the attention now, that's cool. I mean, just go out and see it. It's on Netflix. Might as well check it out.
Absolutely. Well, Rico, this has been great. Why don't you tell people a little bit about... Oh, you know what? Before we do plugs, do you have another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Oh, yes. So just recently, like a couple weeks ago, I saw the movie Leave No Trace. Yeah, it's a great movie. I can't believe I had not watched it before. It's on Amazon Prime. It's about a father and a daughter who live out in the woods. He is a former military guy. And I don't want to give away too much there. I think that's the most I'll give. It's not a tough watch. I think it does feel hopeful because of Thomasin McKenzie's performance as the daughter, being mm-hmm. such a hopeful person who wants to see and wants to experience life. Her dad has seen things and gone through things, and seeing that dynamic between daughter and father was really touching. And if you want a touching and moving experience, I would recommend Leave No Trace.
Yeah, great, great movie. I co-signed that recommendation right now. So, right on. So why don't you tell people where they can find you and your work?
Thank you. So we can be found on our website, alwaysthecriticpod.com. So if you love podcasts, you can check us out, Always the Critic Podcast. We review the latest movies, obviously not now because there is no latest, but we are doing things on our show. Like just recently, the most recent episode was all about the Action Movie Hall of Fame. We created our own fake Hall of Fame and the 8 movies that had to be in that Hall of Fame. So if you want to know, check that out. We are on all the socials at Always Critic Pod. So Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And if you want to follow me personally, you can follow me on Twitter at RicoA87.
Beautiful. Rico, as always, it was great having you here. And keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, and hopefully we'll do it again sometime.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on again. I really enjoy coming on to the show.
This is Todd from iHeartGeek. We believe that anything you're passionate about is geek. And if you are a geek, you are family here. We record once a week and would love to have you join in our conversations. You can get hold of us at www.iheartgeekshow.com. Use the .com, we paid extra for it. You can get us at Twitter at iheartgeekshow. And you can always search us on our Facebook page as well. And keep on geeking on.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Great movie, definitely worth rediscovering if you haven't seen it in quite a while, like I hadn't. But it was a lot of fun to talk about. Thank you, Rico, for joining me on the show, and thank you for listening. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser if you're enjoying the show. And Podchaser, I believe at the time that this is going to go up, is still doing their special promotion where for every review left on the site, they are donating 25 cents to Meals on Wheels. So if you go on Podchaser, go find Piecing It Together and leave us a review, which we would love it if you did anyway, because we want to know how you're enjoying the show. But if you do that, they are going to donate 25 cents. And then if I respond to your review and say, oh, thanks, man. Thanks so much for your comments. I totally agree with what you're saying there about how we should do, more older movies, or, oh yeah, I totally agree. Or no, I disagree. You're crazy, dude. Whatever my reply is, they're going to double that 25 cents to 50 cents. So you should leave a review and then I'll respond to your review. And then we're donating all this money to Meals on Wheels. So go leave a review on Podchaser. And of course, you can follow us on all the social media sites at Piecing Pod. You can join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And you can even come to our Patreon page, where for just a few bucks a month, you can get a bunch of bonus content. And I'm going to be posting some exclusive music on there soon. So come join us on Patreon. That would be amazing if you did that. And, one last thing, if you'd like to be on an episode of Piecing It Together, I am always looking for new co-hosts to come join us. So get in touch with me. I would love to have you on an episode. So definitely, DMs are open, as they like to say. So let's leave you guys with a piece of music, as we always do. I was going to go try to dig up some chiptune music that I've made at some point over the years, but I'm being lazy, and instead I'm going to play you guys a track called Burn, which I played once before on the show, but it kind of has a little bit of a video gamey kind of feel to it, and it's going to be on whatever my next album is. This track is going to be on there. I actually already have a music video that was made for it based off of an idea I had and wrote out like a script, and this animator, Zach Mueller, made the video for me, and it's really freaking cool, and it's going to come out whenever the album comes out. I don't know when that's going to be, but sitting here in quarantine, I've been working on a ton of music. And so that new album might be coming sometime pretty soon, but I can't really say when yet. But whenever it does, there's going to be a music video for this track, Burn. And it's got a little bit of a video game feel, so I figured it'd be a good one to play here on this Scott Pilgrim vs. the World episode. So enjoy Burn, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon. Thank you.
and all points west.